You're listening to Autumn on the Air, the weekly podcast that brings you conversations about the impact of research commercialization and the people who make it happen. Join us for interviews with patent and licensing professionals, innovators, entrepreneurs, and tech transfer leaders on the issues and trends that matter most. Keep listening for an inside track on the people, IP policies, and politics changing our world.
Welcome to Autumn on the Air. Today, we're delving into a crucial aspect of our profession, fostering greater inclusion in innovation. Autumn is committed to providing guidance to its members and the wider technology transfer community on issues that are not just important, but essential for advancing the field globally. In this episode, we'll be discussing one of the newest EDI guides, the 9 points to consider for fostering greater inclusion in innovation. This comprehensive document doesn't just scratch the surface. It dives deep into the challenges surrounding diversity, equity, and inclusion in the innovation ecosystem. From acknowledging the lack of diversity in all stages of the innovation lifecycle to proposing strategies for addressing biases and fostering inclusive educational efforts, these 9 points serve as a roadmap for driving meaningful change within our industry. Joining me for today's discussion are Almisha Campbell, Jennifer Gottwald, and Jay Muir, members of the Autumn Women's Inventors Special Interest Group, who contributed to support the creation of this report. Almisha Campbell is the Assistant Vice President for Research and Economic Development at Jackson State University and the immediate past board chair of Autumn. She is nationally and internationally recognized for her commitment and contributions to innovation and research translation and promotes the inclusion of innovation and entrepreneurship in the faculty tenure and promotion process. Jennifer Gottwald is a director of licensing at the Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundation, also known as WARF, where she has worked for over 15 years. WARF manages the patent and licensing of the University of Wisconsin-Madison, the WeCell Research Institute, and the Morgridge Institute for Research. Jennifer is a founder and active member of the Autumn Women's Inventors Special Interest Group. Jay Muir is recognized as a thought leader in innovation with a remarkable 25-year career at the University of Florida, specializing in technology commercialization and new venture creation. In 2017, she established Muir & Associates Consulting, providing strategic guidance to companies across the innovation lifecycle. Jane's expertise has made her a sought-after advisor, empowering businesses to achieve tangible results. Notably, she has served as the board chair of Autumn and was a founding member of the Autumn Women Inventors Special Interest Group. Welcome to the podcast, Almisha, Jennifer, and Jane.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Lisa.
Well, I'm really excited to have the three of you on the podcast today to talk about the document, 9 points to consider for fostering greater inclusion in innovation. But before we get into specifics on the documents and the 9 points, tell me, how did this document even come about and who was involved in developing it?
Well, I guess since I was the instigator of the document, I'll answer this one. So during my tenure at the University of Florida, we actually did a calendar each year to help educate and inform our faculty and students on the various aspects of tech transfer, and also with the goal of trying to engage them to, you know, submitting more invention disclosures to our office. So in 2015, we decided that it would really be a motivator if we were able to highlight inventors in the calendar who actually had a discovery that had been commercialized into a product or service in the market. So we scoured through our royalty data and we identified licenses that were generating revenue, which meant they had a product in the market. And we reached out to those inventors and we did a photo shoot to capture a bunch of fun shots of them. And it was only after the calendar was published that we realized they were all men.
Oh.
Yeah. Major oop. It was really quite embarrassing. And we got a lot of calls about it. So then the next year, we decided to feature women, you know, all women inventors. Unfortunately, even though our office actually receives over 300 disclosures every year, we had to lower the criteria for who we included in the calendar because we could not identify 12 women inventors who were on patents that were the basis of products in the market. Those sad realities were really frustrating to me. So I took a lesson from our esteemed colleagues who had previously written the 9 points to consider in licensing university technology. And I decided to create a similar document around fostering inclusive innovation. And being a member of the Autumn Women Inventors Special Interest Group, I obviously was aware of the collective deep knowledge of that group on this topic. So I immediately engaged them to provide input and critique. And so the document was actually presented to a number of Autumn boards over the years who also provided some good critique and input for it. And I'd say it's probably undergone at least a dozen iterations to get to the point, that the latest Autumn board under, thank you, Amisha's leadership, finally felt that it was something that they wanted to share with the Autumn membership. And I'm really glad that after that many years of work and that many people's input, we got to the point we did.
Well, I would say, Jane, that's definitely what you would call a passion project because you've stayed dedicated to it for a very long time. So thank you for keeping with it. That's really impressive. And, you know, one of the things that the report says is it refers to it as a roadmap. So given that, how do you suggest tech transfer offices use it?
Lisa would answer that. And I think Jane just gave a good illustration of why this was necessary, right? You look at the issues that you're currently having in terms of invention disclosures, in terms of different activities, and especially any type of engagement you have with inventors on your campus, and you really crunch the data and see what's happening and what can you do. So when I talk to people about this document, the first thing I would say, get your team together. Get your data together about what your office has been doing. Start having those hard conversations, because if we don't have those hard conversations, we won't realize what we need to do. And then start mapping out what have we not been doing to engage women, to engage different sectors of people within our campus. And then figuring out what's the best way. And the best way to do that is do your customer discovery. I think, you know, I must applaud the Women Inventors SIG because they did go out and do customer discovery with the prior interviews that they did to get that article together about women engaging in tech transfer, right, and how they engage with that office. And some of those lessons that we should look at as well as we're building out that roadmap for our campus. But the 9 points really laid out some of the things that we can do. And we could take each point and have conversations with our colleagues on campus, then talk to the faculty innovators that we're working with as well, and to see they may have ideas that our office may not have because we're looking at things in one perspective. And I think that's one of the things I would do, but definitely a roadmap, because you have 1 point all the way down to 9, and you keep going at each of them until you get to the end of where you actually have made an impact. And you can look back and say, here is where we were and here we are now. And while there may be some improvements that can be made continuously, we have made great strides. And so I think this document is so timely. And, you know, Jane talked about, you know, having go through different iteration, but there's no time like the present where this is actually needed right now, right here and right in this moment.
Absolutely. I think you said that very, very well. And I think that's a great segue as well to starting to have the deep discussion here about these various 9 points. And so let's start at the beginning at the very first point, point number one. And that point involves the lack of diversity and inclusion in all stages of the innovation lifecycle. So why was it important to lead with this particular point first?
You know, Lisa, I think both Jane and Almisha have really pointed this out already. The first point is to really acknowledge that there's a lack of diversity in the innovation cycle. I have been involved in this for many, many years now. And I can't tell you how many times I have been at a conference, heard a talk on this topic, you know, had somebody read an article, send it to me, where very well-meaning people say, well, we're not seeing women inventing yet at the same rates because, you know, it's a pipeline problem. We have to get more girls interested in STEM and then they'll become more faculty members and they'll be inventing as much. And yes, that is true. And there are people working on that. And that's super important work and really great. But we also know that women kind of fall out of that pipeline along each step of the way. You can get so many girls interested in STEM, but you still only have maybe 2 chemistry faculty members who are female compared to 12 who are male. We also know that the people who have measured these numbers, that pipeline issue does not account for all the disparities in innovation, for example, patenting or giving disclosures to your tech transfer office. When you look at that data on a personal basis, you can find that a male faculty member at a given department often will give you more disclosures per year on average than a female in the lab next door will. And we know that there's something causing this. So I think when you look at all parts of the innovation cycle, we see that women aren't as represented. And they're the ones we're studying because we can do the naming algorithms so much more easily. We know that other underrepresented groups are also more underrepresented within the innovation ecosystem. So we just have to make everybody aware of that and agree that this is an issue and that there are things we can do to change it.
Absolutely. And building on that comes point number 2, which focuses on the point that greater inclusion of women and minorities in all phases of the innovation lifecycle will ensure a greater diversity of products that address unmet needs that people from all ethnic backgrounds can benefit from. So what can tech transfer offices do to help enrich the inventive talent pool with individuals from different genders, races, and nationalities?
That's a very good question, Lisa. I think first thing is to look at our demographic makeup on our campus. Then we look at having conversations with individuals on the campus, whether it's through lunch and learns and, you know, involving them in conversations that we're having just to make them aware of what the tech transfer office does. One of the things that sometimes we don't understand well is the barriers for them engaging with the tech transfer. It could be minor things like the time when we're having programs. It could be childcare issue. It could be anything as to why they're not engaging. But if we're not having those conversations, we won't be able to know. And I think we could start identifying some of the people that we could consider as champions that can have those conversations at the department level, at the college level, that will talk about the work of the TTO, the resources that are available. And I think once you start doing that and have some sort of mentorship program for these people to engage, it would make it much easier. I think a lot of our tech transfer offices are doing a great job of having fellowship programs where we're bringing in young talent into the tech transfer office. We need to look at that as well and make sure that there's diversity in that group as well, because those can be your champions that can go back to the classroom, can go back to the department level and talk about the work of the TTO to engage more people in the field. Research shows that a lot of times minorities don't engage because they're not sure that it's a fit for them. They're not sure that it's accessible. They're not sure if the confidence level is not there because they see other counterparts doing it and they're thinking, well, I don't have that type of technology that the university has been promoting as one of the good stories. So I'm not going to go and disclose. Or sometimes women especially wait until they perfect it. We are perfectionists.
Oh my gosh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, we wait until we perfect this to disclose. Whereas it shows that the men will come in sometimes too early because they have high confidence level in themselves and their work. So we have to break down some of those barriers. We have to have those conversations that are one-on-one. We have to move outside of the four walls of our offices and go where the people are and having nice conversations, inviting them out for lunch, whether it be casual or something formal that you have in a part of the office. Unless we're doing those engagements, we won't know who these people are. We won't know what their barriers are. We won't know how easy it is for them to get involved in some aspect of our process and engage on a different level. So I think those are some of the things that are low level that we could start doing. But again, a good start would be to understand your demographic makeup on your campus, because if you're trying to do this, you need to know who they are, you need to know where they are, you need to know how to reach them, and then you need to know the conversation you should have with them. big. Language is a big barrier for many, you know, minorities. When we're using terminologies, when we're using acronyms, we have to be careful in how we're communicating so that the entry into the process will be easier. They won't feel overwhelmed with the process, and they will feel like this is a welcoming, you know, entity that is opening up its arms to allow me to learn something new and something exciting.
I think that was an excellent point, Elmisha. And moving on to point number three. Now, this point reflects on the fact that gender and other biases are very deeply ingrained in our society, and that it's essential that we recognize these biases and that strategies be developed for addressing them. Can you provide some examples of these biases and some of the strategies tech transfer offices can use to address these?
Sure. So, Lisa, I think this is a super important point and something that can be really humbling to get at as a person. You know, human beings have evolved to a way that we can assess situations really, really quickly and use our past experiences to figure out what's happening, what's right in front of us. But this can also do a disservice to us. I am not a psychologist nor sociologist, so I don't pretend to be an expert on these topics. But I personally have taken some of the Harvard online unconscious bias tests. I have been horrified by my attitudes towards men versus women and where I think expertise and authority is and who I should believe. Another example is just I work in the tech transfer office at the university I was educated at. If I get a disclosure from somebody who was my teacher years ago, I automatically give them a whole lot more credibility than somebody I don't know. We have to understand that we're always putting our own interpretation on what we're hearing. You hear about orchestras doing auditions for musicians where the musicians are behind a blind and nobody can see anything about that person but judge it on the musicality and the skill itself. What we're judging when people bring us their disclosures, their inventions, their innovations, their research is so much more subjective than anything like that. So we have to be super careful about what we're bringing from our own mind into our assessment of that. I think personally, what I like to do is just always question myself. Why do you think that way? Why do you think that way? And get to the point of, it's not because I saw this data and it didn't look that compelling. It may be she was really quiet when she was presenting this to me and didn't seem so sure of it herself. So maybe I'm not really taking it seriously either. So I think it's an important thing for everybody personally to do. And I think for our offices, there's a wealth of trainings out there that different people can take advantage of to uncover why you are assessing something the way you are. And is it something you can overcome through actually thinking through your thought processes and figuring out where your judgments are coming from?
I would just like to, you know, go back to something Jennifer said, too, because people have suggested to me, well, why don't you do blind reviews of your invention disclosures? And that's a really effective technique when you're doing orchestras and a lot of other venues and avenues. But when it comes to tech transfer, you know, when you get an invention disclosure, rarely does it have enough information in it to make decisions about how to move forward with that disclosure. And so you have to engage with the inventor in the process in order to make educated, informed decisions, which again, preclude your ability to do any sort of blind review of your invention disclosures.
Yeah, and I think, Jennifer, that point you made about asking yourself that question, why do I think that way, is really helpful. And remembering that we all have implicit unconscious bias. It's, you know, nothing that's reflective about us as people. It's just something inherently that we as humans all have. So I think that was a really great suggestion. So let's move on to point number four, which deals with education, which Elmisha alluded to a little bit before. And the document states that inclusive educational efforts are needed to demystify the invention and technology commercialization process in order to ensure greater engagement of faculty. What types of training programs have you seen that are successful when it comes to improving engagement of faculty?
Yes, training is a really important component of engaging faculty to participate in innovation. Unfortunately, oftentimes there's not a lot of diversity amongst the trainers or the speakers or the mentors they include in their training programs. So incorporating facilitators and trainers that come from diverse backgrounds is very, very important. You know, there's a saying out there that you've got to see it to be it. And so people conducting the training serve as role models. So it's important that they're relatable and that the people in the audience can see it. I would say, furthermore, you know, underrepresented populations are underrepresented because they face unique challenges to participation. And training programs that recognize and address those unique challenges they face and that provide the participants with tools and techniques for overcoming those challenges can be extremely impactful. There's actually a group in Washington, D.C. called Invent Together, and they collaborated with Qualcomm and a number of others to create what's called the Inventors Patent Academy. And this is a free e-learning course that was created to help people understand patenting and intellectual property. But it's unique in that it also explores some of the challenges that underrepresented inventors, particularly women, people of color, individuals with lower incomes, and people with disabilities face. And it provides them with tools to overcome them. And as I mentioned, it's free. So check it out.
Yeah, it's a really great program. I would encourage people to check it out. It's been really well done by Invent Together. So thank you, Jane, for mentioning that. So I want to move on to point five, which focuses on encouraging participation of all faculty in innovation, and that this requires different outreach for different audiences. So recognizing that there are cultural differences amongst faculty, what can tech transfer offices do to reach a broader and more inclusive audience of innovators?
That's a good question, Lisa. And yes, we have to understand the diverse makeup of our faculty in when we are trying to engage them. I think one of the good ways I've seen not only my institution, but a lot of institutions are doing is having recognition for the faculty who are innovating, right? And making sure that they're having some sort of event where they're highlighting their work, they're recognizing them, awarding them. But you have to go beyond those that are already engaged by making sure that you're inviting key people there. So, you know, if you're highlighting people from a different, you know, demographics that you hadn't, you know, you don't usually see participate, and this is the one person, make that person your champion and talk about their work, have them, you know, go back to their departments as ambassadors to talk about the program, invite two of the faculty members to that event to have those type of conversations. I think also a good route is using students that are attached to faculty in terms of their research. And, you know, talking about what the tech transfer offices does, how does your faculty prefer to receive information? I've had faculty that said to me, I get too many emails. Can you filter out which ones you send to me? And I said, well, all that I send to you are relevant to you. So I need to, you know, dig a little deeper. So having those conversations, I realized these people need quick information. They need you to come to their offices. They need a quick Zoom call. There are different things that they need from you. And we just have to figure out what works best. So after you've done what I said previously about checking your demographics, is also figuring out the way they consume information. And then use that. But I think the highlighting of them, the showcasing of it, setting aside Innovation Month. For example, this month is Women History Month. How many of us are having events on our campus showcasing the women that are doing great work on our campuses? How many of us are, when we send emails out to our innovators about them getting a patent, how many of us are copying the department chair, the dean? I've seen places where the department chair just copies all the faculty in that department so they can see the great work of the other faculty that they're doing and how they're engaging in the process. Those are some unique ways that I think you can help get other people engaged. But a lot of it would be really meeting them where they are, going to their labs, trying to have those one-on-one conversations with them. I pride my career in having that one-on-one with the faculty. I've been in their labs. I know what's in their lab. I know what equipment they need, what they don't need. I know their postdocs. I know their graduate students. And having that relationship when those students, those postdocs end up becoming faculty, they remember Dr. Campbell. They remember that I was in those labs having those conversations. And I don't understand, not all of us can do it. I'm at a small institution, so I have that luxury. And so those are large institutions not going to have that. But we just have to figure out from having those one-on-one conversations, doing those showcases, as well as doing those recognition ceremony, and making sure that most of us fall under a division of research and economic development or something of that sort. If we do, then when they're doing their research day, ask for a section where you can highlight innovation that's happening on the campus as well, and use that as a moment, because the faculty are going to be there anyway at research day. So you use that moment to specifically highlight the innovation and highlight the faculty engaging in that process.
Having come from a very large research institution, Almisha, that truly is a luxury that many, many offices don't have. So one thing I would just add to, you know, how you can reach out to more inclusive audiences is to go to them where they are. So there are a lot of groups on campuses, you know, women engineer groups, you know, society, you know, where minorities participate. And so going to them and helping them understand the benefit that their members can gain by participating in innovation is a great way to be more inclusive in your efforts and to reach out to those particular populations.
Well, thank you both. I think those are some really great suggestions, both from a smaller and a larger institution. So I think that's really, really helpful. Now, moving on to point six, this point notes that efforts should be made to ensure that all inventors are given the same level of service before, during, and after the invention process. So I was curious, why did you think that this point needed to be specifically included?
Well, it's kind of interesting because Almisha alluded earlier to the paper that was done by the Autumn Weisig. And we actually conducted a survey of academic women engaged in some way in invention and entrepreneurship with two key goals. We wanted to understand factors that encouraged and discouraged academic women's participation in technology commercialization. And we also wanted to better understand the barriers that impede female participation so that we could help to address and reduce those barriers. And the paper was entitled Engaging More Women in Academic Innovation, Findings and Recommendations. And both of my esteemed colleagues on the call today were co-authors on that paper. What was really interesting about the survey findings was that one of the major contributors for survey respondents to actually engage in innovation was the encouraging interactions that they had with members of their tech transfer office. And conversely, one of the major barriers to participation reported by the respondents was discouraging interactions they had with members of their tech transfer office. So that obviously really demonstrates the pivotal role
Yep.
played by tech transfer staff in determining who engages and who does not.
So point number seven talks about how all faculty that are interested in starting a company should be given equal consideration and support. So it kind of builds on point number six. This seems, again, to be like an obvious point. So why include this one as well?
I think this is looking specifically at entrepreneurship. And I was just thinking about it. We still do those exercises, close your eyes and picture a scientist. And I think as a society, we've come further where not everybody is seeing the exact same, older man with gray hair sticking up as a crazy scientist wearing a lab coat. We picture a lot of different kinds of people. But I'm wondering if we're moving into the area where you picture an entrepreneur and you might see a Silicon Valley tech bro wearing the latest vest from wherever they're all coming from and the super cool shoes and hanging out with the other tech bros. Entrepreneurship is such an empowering and important part of our society, both for our economy and our country, but also for the people involved in it, how incredibly empowering it can be, whether or not you start a company. So I think we have to be really intentional that we are supporting everybody who could be an entrepreneur, not even though even those who don't yet recognize that they want to be an entrepreneur. Sometimes even the word can get in the way. I've been doing some work recently in my job looking at rural entrepreneurship, especially around agriculture, and finding from some people who are trying to encourage and educate more rural entrepreneurs, they don't even think of themselves as entrepreneurs. If they market things with the word side gig, they get a lot more people showing up than if they say entrepreneurs. So I think it's just really, really important for all of us to make sure that we are reaching everybody who could benefit from entrepreneurial training and support everybody who wants to go into that incredibly exciting and risk-taking area. And I think it's important that our entrepreneurial support system, our incubators, our accelerators, look at themselves, recognize what level of diversity and inclusion that they have within their programs, and work at making it truly representative of the groups that they're serving. I want to give a shout out to a local group here in Madison, the Doyen Group, who encourages entrepreneurship with women and other underrepresented groups. And some of those people have taught me that the whole idea that you fit your life in around entrepreneurship really cuts out a large swath of society. You know, if you are the primary caregiver for children at home, you can't make entrepreneurship your main thing. But they always talk about fitting entrepreneurship in around your life, and that you can be successful doing that, and that you can define what success is going to be as an entrepreneur too. So I think we just have to look at entrepreneurship more broadly, look at the language we're using, and making sure that we're fitting those definitions of everybody we should be serving in cultivating and educating entrepreneurs.
So point number 8 is that programs should be considered that address the unmet needs and unique challenges faced by women and minorities in the technology commercialization process. And I think this is a great, great point. But given the current climate that we're in, how do you recommend tech transfer offices approach these programs, given the fallout from the Students for Fair Admissions versus Harvard and UNC case? And the fact that many states are passing or proposing to pass laws that limit ED&I efforts on university campuses?
Yeah, Lisa, that's a heavy question. Because yes, this is happening. Recently, that was done in Alabama. But I want to be clear that what we are discussing here today is not about one discriminating against anyone or giving anyone any preference in this ecosystem. What we are talking about is making sure that everyone has access and as much people as possible are engaging in the process. We know because of the work we do that innovation occurs everywhere. What we're trying to do is making sure that everyone who wants to engage, everyone who can contribute to the innovation ecosystem, know how to do so and that they're able to do so with the resources that we have. This is not about giving them any preference. This is not about taking away the rights of anyone. It's about making this as inclusive as possible so everyone can participate and contribute. And let me say this. This would be one of the best things that can happen to the United States of America. If everyone that is able to and can contribute is given that opportunity to do so. And I want to send that message out to all of us that are engaging in this process to look at it from that perspective, that we're not making sure that one group has preference over the other. We're not trying to take resources from one and give it to the other. What we're trying to say is that keep innovating. Here's the process in which you can disclose. Here's the processes which you can participate and contribute to the economic stability of the United States of America. If we want to stay in front and if we want to continue being the lead in this nation of innovation and in our ecosystem, then we have to make sure that everybody can participate and provide them the opportunity to do so.
Thank you, Almisha. I think that was very, very well said. So we're up to our final point, which is point 9. And this is a reminder that women and minorities need greater access to mentorship. And Almisha, you've mentioned a couple times about champions, networks, and role models. So what can tech transfer offices do to increase this access?
I think one of the things, easy, low-hanging fruit, you know, allow people to shadow us in our offices, allow them to come in, you know, and engage in some of the process, whether it's a faculty or a student learning in our office for a short period of time to understand what's entailed in the process. A lot of our universities have created ambassador programs where we are giving the faculty enough information about the operations of the TTO so they can go back to their departments and their colleges and be the voice for the TTO in those department and college meetings. That would be a champion. One of the things, too, is that I know a lot of people who need mentors. And sometimes the best mentor is not the people on our campus. Reach out to our colleagues at, you know, other campuses and see how we can create this network of, you know, hey, I have a faculty in my department. They just need a, you know, someone to talk to. They may need a subject matter expert. Do you know anyone I can connect them with to have those conversations? And I think that's one of the things that people need. They need to know that there's a support system in place that they can have conversations with. They can talk about their innovation and without any judgment. Because even if it's too early to disclose, they should be able to have conversations if they want to. And even after they disclose, what are the systems that we have in place to support them? And so I think those fellowship programs that we can create, not just focusing on students, because we do that a lot. We have our grad students coming into a TTO. Think about a faculty that can come into your TTO and spend a couple hours a week and learn some simple, you know, how do we teach them certain things? Well, even if it's just to do a patent landscape search, just think about the wealth of information that faculty will go back to their department with, to their team in their labs with, or to their centers, and how that could spread across different aspects of the research enterprise and boost innovation across the entire campus. Those are some simple things that I think can be done. But they're also formal programs. If we have the capacity to do so, they're formal programs we can put in place to make sure that the faculty know there's something in place for them should they need that access and that information.
So, Almisha, Jane, and Jennifer, as the podcast comes to a close, is there anything else that you'd like tech transfer offices to know about or consider with respect to this 9 points document?
I would get started, Lisa. One thing I would say is that don't let this can be a living document for you. Feel free to add some other elements to this document should you think there's other things that you can do on your campus after you've talked to your team. Feel free to also reach out and share it to the Women Inventors Group so they can update it on the official, you know, Autumn site as well, because we want to make sure that whatever we can do to ensure an inclusive innovation ecosystem, that we are making this a process just like we do our strategic plan, right? If there's something that we see that we can do, feel free to add that. There are things that the Women Inventors Group do as well, like toolkits that they may be able to add an addendum there. I think that's one way. But before I end, I also want to just, you know, here give special thanks to the Women Inventors Group, especially being led in this effort by Jane and Jennifer for all the hard work they have done to put this through. As you heard, it's a labor of love that they've gone through, and they're doing great things at their own institutions and in their own jobs. But I think they're looking at this from a holistic perspective of how this can really affect America and its standing. And so they want to make sure that this is done. They're not doing this for any personal reason, but other than to make sure that this is something that is impacting all of us, because we have conversations about this. But now they put in a toolkit in front of you, a roadmap that would help guide your conversations on your campus. So I want to personally thank all of them for the work that they're doing on this. And I know they're going to keep bringing some other ideas up. And I look forward to see what they do next. So thank you all so much.
Go ahead, Jennifer.
Yeah, so I just want to throw some thanks Almisha's way, too. I really appreciate the Autumn Board taking this seriously, really considering it and adopting it, because as Almisha said, I think this provides a roadmap for all of us. My final word to the tech transfer offices would be, you're not in this alone. As Almisha said, as we all learn from using this, share that knowledge. And as you go through these points, there are programs that your colleagues are already doing within Autumn. They can help you with it. the point I talked about female entrepreneurs, Equalize Startups is an amazing program that's been going for 5 years now. And there are still some states that have not had an equalizer. We need to get this taken advantage of throughout across the country. We need to get this taken advantage of across the country. It's an amazing incubator for female academic entrepreneurs. So you're not in it alone. Others have started this already and can guide you. And then you in turn can guide those that come behind you.
Yeah, I will just say technology transfer professionals are in a pivotal role and empowered in a position that they have tremendous ability to impact greater inclusion and innovation. And, you know, we mentioned that the 9 points originated in 2017, and we did the WISIG survey in 2021, published it in 2022. And it was interesting to see how the survey not only helped inform the 9 points document, but also helped to validate much of what had been written prior to the survey in the paper. So as Jennifer and Almisha alluded to earlier, it is an iterative process. And I'd like to challenge everyone who's hearing this podcast to read both the WISIG paper and the 9 points document, convene a meeting in your office to engage your colleagues in conversations about approaches that might be right for you to take to ensure greater inclusion at your institution. And if you do, please share your progress with me, because I submitted an abstract for next year's annual Autumn meeting to make sure we continue the dialogue around the 9 points. And I will be looking for panelists to share their experiences. So I challenge you to be a champion for change in your organization. There's a wonderful saying out there that I'd love to share. We can work to make a difference, or we can do nothing. Either way, we are helping to shape the future.
Well, I think that was a great way to end. And I can't thank the three of you enough, Almisha, Jane, and Jennifer, for all this incredible hard work and the dedication that you've had in bringing the 9 points document to fruition. And thank you so much for doing all you can to help foster a greater and more inclusive innovation ecosystem.
Thank you, Lisa, for sharing our information.
And that's a wrap for today's episode. A huge thank you to Almisha, Jennifer, and Jane for sharing their insights on the 9 points document. It's clear that with their leadership, we're not just talking the talk, we're walking the walk towards a more inclusive innovation landscape. Thanks for tuning in. And remember, innovation thrives when everyone is invited to the table.
Thanks for listening to Autumn on the Air with Lisa Mueller. Get social with us and share your thoughts. You can tweet us at AUTM or visit us online at AUTM.net. We'll be back next week on the air. Be sure to join us.